This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of July 30th, 2018. I'm Mason King, news editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and on this week's podcast, we're going to talk about growth. Now, any entrepreneur would be thrilled and then probably get on the phone with potential investors for his or her company to grow its annual revenue by 335% over a three-year period. And that's what Josh Owens saw as CEO of Indianapolis-based SupplyKick from fiscal year 2015 to 2017. And to affix some numbers to that, SupplyKick revenue increased from about $3.5 million in 2015 to more than $15 million in 2017. Cause for celebration, obviously. But that steep trajectory comes with some serious challenges and some huge potential pitfalls. So I'm going to pitch to my interview with Josh about meeting those challenges in a second here. But you should know that the occasion for this conversation is IBJ's annual list of the 25 fastest growing private firms in the Indianapolis area. SupplyKick obviously is on the list, but because it had not been published at the time of this interview, I can't tell them where it ranked. I will let you guys know at the end of the interview. Okay, so here we go. Hey, Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. Okay, give me two or three words that describe your state of mind over the last 3 years.
Crazy, excited, challenged. I think those are all things that we've been dealing with. Anytime you're going through some fast growth, kind of by definition, you start seeing everything very quickly and all the problems rise up pretty quickly and all the successes rise up pretty quickly as well. And so it's been a nice combination of both.
Yeah, I would assume that when you're kind of strapped into the rocket ship like that, it's got to be stressful.
It is stressful, although it provides a lot of opportunities for reflection, which has probably been the most interesting and exciting part for me, just personally, I would say. You know, as a business, we've been lucky that we've been growing so quickly. And I think the result of that has both been obvious growth for the business itself, but a ton of just opportunities for everyone who's been on the team. So we've added a large number of team members. I mean, we're still a pretty efficient operation. We've got about 36 team members as of today. But it's been fun to watch so many of those team members step up into new leadership positions, step up into new positions that we didn't know existed, or didn't exist for us as a company, a year ago, and just watch them take advantage of that. So that's been pretty personally fulfilling as well.
First, tell us what SupplyKick does, and be gentle with this layman. Assume I am 8 years old and not a particularly smart 8 year old.
Sure.
What is it that SupplyKick does?
Yeah. So SupplyKick helps brands and manufacturers sell on Amazon is the easiest way to think about it. And effectively, if you think about Amazon, it's now effectively a giant mall. And so we've got consumers coming to that mall all day. They can buy from Amazon or they can buy from other sellers, other retailers on Amazon. And we, SupplyKick, are one of those retailers on Amazon, working directly with just over 100 brands, thousands of products, selling those direct to consumers on Amazon. For the brand perspective, we do all types of marketing initiatives, advertising initiatives, all of the customer service and compliance. And then kind of the key piece, we'll take care of inventory for those brands manufacturers as well.
So it SupplyKick is itself a store.
Yeah, effectively a store on Amazon.
A store on a store.
Yeah, if you think about how Amazon's built, it's actually really fascinating because I like to think of ourselves as a retailer. I don't know that, two or three years ago, that's not what we were trying to build or how I was thinking about it, but that is very clearly what we became. And so we've kind of embraced that as we've been growing over the last year and a half in particular. But I kind of alluded that Amazon is more of a mall today than it is a place where it's selling its own goods, mm-hmm. right? And
sure.
So effectively, what Amazon is trying to do is get as many brands, manufacturers, and products selling on their platform as possible. And they've been incredibly successful at that. As you can imagine, the back end of Amazon, though, is incredibly difficult to manage. There are all types of compliance issues. There's all types of issues of just Amazon changing buttons and whistles and things here and there. And unless you've just got a smart team that's constantly on top of that, it's pretty hard to manage. You know, I think about 3 years ago, it became obvious to us that there was an opportunity in the marketplace to be able to work directly with these brands or manufacturers in a traditional retail relationship, similar to what they have with a Target or a Home Depot or a Lowe's or a Sullivan's Hardware, for example, locally, and be able to have that specific direct relationship with that brand or manufacturer, but specifically on the Amazon platform.
So SupplyKick was established in, I think, 2012?
2013.
Okay. Yep. And just give me the quick origin story. What was it supposed to be at the beginning?
Sure. So in 2013, it was founded by Chris Palmer. He and I were both in the OAR Fellowship, so we knew each other kind of early on. It was effectively a side business that he had. It was a retail arbitrage business. So you've got companies with products that are either coming out of seasonality or businesses that are going out of business that need to liquidate their inventory. And a pretty common way to be able to do that is to then take that inventory. If you can buy it at the lower price here locally, you can sell at the higher price online. There are literally millions of companies or individuals, some companies doing that on Amazon and eBay and all types of marketplaces. There's a decent business to be made in that retail arbitrage business, but it is difficult. Your margins are fluctuating. You're kind of constantly chasing the next great sale, and that can get pretty tiring. And so, Chris and I were kind of chatting about the business. This was about a year and a half into it. And we were just recognizing that we had some Amazon expertise, but we thought that we could use it in a more sustainable, scalable way. And that was working directly with those brands or manufacturers because we were already used to taking on inventory. It was not a big shift for us to be able to do a traditional retail relationship with these brands and manufacturers on Amazon. They weren't really getting that option a lot. They were getting a lot of marketing companies who said, hey, buy our technology and it'll help you sell more. But what these businesses were effectively saying to us was, well, that's great, but we also need help managing our inventory, and also Amazon's confusing. We don't really know how to do keyword search there, and we also aren't great at the 24-hour customer service. Mm. So we packaged that all together, and it turns out, as I kind of say, we were both lucky and smart. We were lucky that we kind of found the right opportunity at the right time, but we were smart enough to identify that. And as it started to develop, we really invested in that very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we've been able to see the really quick growth over the last 3 years.
Right. So that pivot was about 2015.
Yeah, about 2015.
So I assume things just really start to take off.
They did.
What problems start cropping up when they start to take off?
You know, I think you probably end up running into a number of the typical we're scaling people and hiring new people. And so you've got all of those type of, I wouldn't say problems, just learning along the way. There's any number of books about how to hire the right people and get them plugged into the right position and build culture from nothing. But at the end of the day, you just kind of have to do that, and you're just going to mess up as you're doing that. So I think that there was a whole set of those type of situations. And then, you know, I'd say on the business side for us, the challenges were specifically for me and kind of leading it and thinking about our growth as a company. It was really around the sequencing of events. When do we bring in this role versus another role? Or when do we make investments in marketing versus investments in trade shows? Or, you know, kind of fill in the gap. And as you grow, obviously you have a lot more opportunities coming at you. And so kind of the biggest thing for us early on was figuring out how to focus and trust that we're focusing on the right thing and not saying no to things that could have been cool opportunities. So really minimizing distractions.
So, I mean, there's a fair amount of like discombobulation going on internally, yep. I assume. And do your existing employees start to feel a little stressed? How do you start communicating with them about what's happening?
Yeah. So I would say you see the existing team members doing two things, feeling a little stressed and also feeling incredibly excited about what could potentially come for them. Yeah. And so they're kind of struggling with, hey, I'm being asked to do more things, but also this thing over here that I never even thought of is now all of a sudden something that matters for SupplyKick. And I'm interested in, at a minimum, having my hand in it, but maybe also leading it and kind of going between those. So honestly, the biggest thing that we found early on is excessive communication. And it's one of our just core values as a company. We're just going to communicate a lot, even when we're uncomfortable or when we don't know the answer. We're going to talk a lot about it, and we're going to figure out what the right path is forward. It doesn't mean that we're going to agree on it. Doesn't mean everyone's going to get their way, but it does mean we're going to have open conversations about that. So, you know, one of the things that I guess, you know, we're here in Indianapolis, everyone talks about, you know, ExactTarget and their rise, and obviously Scott Dorsey was a great leader there. He wrote a kind of famed weekly note to his team members, mm-hmm. and as the company grew. And so I think if you're going to be a good Indianapolis company, you have to adopt that and continue doing that. So, you know, about a year and a half ago, I adopted that. And I do think I'm so glad that I did, because that form of communication, it turns out, as we've grown, And again, we're a relatively small company, still just 36 people or so, but we started the year at 17 people. Even in that switch from 17 to 36 people, you know, the truth is less people are getting direct information from me. I'm less involved in the day-to-day. I'm involved in the big picture strategy and they're executing pieces of that, but it's typically now going through layers of, you know, different individuals or team leads who are conveying pieces of that. And so little things like that, that just kind of forced us to be able to continue to have an open dialogue that people understand what we're trying to achieve. And that was really the goal. So it's really around communication.
Let me just go back real quick.
Yeah.
If we go back to the pivot around 2015, how many employees did you have at that point?
Good question. We would have been around 10, just right at 9 or 10 people.
Okay. And now you're about 36.
Yep.
And then you said you went from 17 to 36 over what period of time?
Since January.
This year?
Yeah, this year.
Holy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot. It has been. And I'll you know, be the first one to admit, we knew what we were signing up for. That was, you know, we had a very bold goal for what we wanted to achieve this year. And if we did anything near that, it meant we were going to have to hire people very quickly. And we've been self-financing the business. So, you know, that means that it comes out of our profitability. We're prioritizing bringing people in for future growth and these roles that we think that they can achieve, you know, high results in. With that comes, you know, getting the culture right and getting the communication right and getting the strategy and the sequencing right. And I think we've been lucky that we've been better than average at that, but better than average still means that you're making tens, if not hundreds, of mistakes a week. You know, okay. as you're doing.
Okay,
that.
So what was a mistake? What was a mistake you look back on and go, oh wow, I learned something from that?
I would say I've learned this year kind of the power of setting a high goal and helping people understand how they can benefit from that, from achieving that goal. And so if I then take that like positive that I've learned this year, probably the negative on that side is just when you're moving so fast, bringing so many new people on, I think I underrated how much disruption, while it's all well-intentioned and it's good people, how much disruption just doubling your team size means. And it's everyday disruption. It's building new desks. It's now you have more people in the conference room and the conference room gets too hot, or, you know, just all the little things that start to add up. And so, you know, for me, I think I probably would have rethought some of the sequencing of when we were bringing those positions on relative to what we were trying to achieve. I probably brought some of them on a little bit sooner than I would have otherwise, now looking back, but I wouldn't change it because, you know, now we're sitting here going into the second half of the year, really primed to continue executing on all of the success that we had in the first half of the year.
Bringing on that many people. Okay, that's literally a full-time job. At some point, did you have to like create a human resources department?
Yeah, no, we did. We brought on Natalie Rytek. She came over from the Iron Yards. That was a position that I prioritized relatively early. So that would have been in fall of last year, 2017. So that would have been just before this ramp up, kind of in our 10 to 17 person scale, which also felt large, you know, kind of one person every other month. So that was really key, and that was smart. I don't have a good feel for when in the scale up process companies are bringing either an HR or a talent or a culture professional in. But my based on all the experience that I've had so far, I would have even looking back on this, I would have made that hire even sooner. I just think you can't invest in that soon enough. When you're early on, it tends to be a top-down culture. It's kind of like whatever I set as the culture is what everyone else kind of emulates. And I was just very, talked about this a lot at the end of last year and early this year. If we're going to build a sustainable culture, it can't be something that people are perceiving about me or what I want about SupplyKick. It has to be what everyone here wants. There are a lot of parts of our strategy that are top down and are based on where I think we should take the company. But as far as the day in, day out, how it feels at SupplyKick, I have input in that, but everyone else has input as well. And I think bringing that back to that culture higher, having someone as a point person early is at a minimum a signal to everyone that this matters. And ideally, it's not just that, it also allows them to kind of flourish in that environment.
So. I have a lot of trouble with the word culture, especially companies that talk about creating it or somehow social engineering it.
Yep.
And it sounds so ephemeral to me and so organic that how can you possibly control that?
Yeah. So it's really a difference between hiring for culture or hiring for values. And I forget where I've heard this from, but I've heard it from multiple people and I heard it very early on, which is, one of the things that we're going for at Supply Kick is a diverse workforce. If you're really focused on culture, it's very easy to find a lot of people who look like and think like and sound like you in your culture.
Yeah, right. Which we all say now is bad.
Right, exactly. And especially in a business like ours, where we're really going after working with a large number of products, a large number of partners across a diversity of categories, it is strategically important for us to be diverse so that we're going after and working with all types of different products.
And when you say diverse, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I think, diversity within the workforce is all types of diversity. I think it's diversity of how people are thinking. I think it's diversity of experiences. I think it's diversity of background. I think it's diversity of educational experiences for sure. I think it's color and sexual orientation and all of those things as well. And so I think it's being very smart about that. From a business sense, diversity for us, though, is kind of what we're predicated on, is working with a large number of partners across all types of categories on Amazon. And so if we're going to go after beauty products and kitchen products and hardware products and, fill in the gap, that means by definition, we need a lot of people who are at different stages of their life and thinking about different things. We need people who are having kids. We need people who are building homes. And we need people who can empathize and sympathize with different places and products that people might be interested in.
That's brilliant. That's the best example or the best description I've heard so far.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So it's important. And then I guess kind of the last piece that you were talking about there, which is important, is really honing in on there's a set of values that matter at Supply Kick: transparency, communication, that we talk about internally. And really it's making sure that we align that hiring process with those values. And you're exactly right. That's kind of one of the things I talked about on the culture side. We're going to have some culture no matter what. To your point, whoever is there is going to create some sort of atmosphere around the place, and that's going to be what it is. Now, we can try to manipulate that in certain ways, but mostly what we want to do is remind everyone that they're empowered to make this place what they want it to be.
Let's take a quick pause, and we'll be back with more from Josh Owens.
Thanks for listening to the IBJ podcast. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, or almost anywhere you find podcasts. And don't forget to check out all of our stories at ibj.com.
Okay, we're back with Josh Owens, CEO of Supply Kick. One of the problems that I guess I see in textbooks about growing fast is potentially losing touch with your customers.
Yes.
Is that something that you guys dealt with when you were... Or I guess currently are dealing with?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we've dealt so much with the issue of losing touch with our customers. I would say for us, it's been a little bit more of we've been growing very quickly. And as a result, we've had a large cross-section of customers, what we call partners, that we work with. And as you can imagine, some of those, as we continue growing, are bigger relative to others. And so really, not necessarily losing touch, but kind of prioritizing and spending your time on the right partners at the right time, making sure that you don't lose sight of the smaller ones that do have a lot of potential for growth or might be out of season and their product is coming into season versus the product that is doing insanely well right now because it's the middle of the summer and everyone wants it before they go to the beach. And I just feel like that for us has been a thing that we've had to focus on, that we've had to intensely talk about, that we've had to just be aware of and constantly keep improving on. And I'm pretty sure at this point that is going to be the story of us for the rest of our existence. We're just going to constantly be, if we keep growing, even if it's not this quick, but any growth requires you to keep resetting your expectations and thinking about what comes next. And by definition, that kind of changes what you currently have. It changes the way you currently you look at your current business.
So you are putting together a note or a letter every week.
Every week, I send out via email.
And then do you get feedback on that? I mean,
do you
schedule 2 hours between noon and two to like it kind depends. Of absorb what happens?
Yeah, no, it's a rough week if I start writing the email on Friday. That's then you know, like, I haven't had much time to think about this, and it's going to be a little bit more of a stream of thoughts. You know, so on good weeks, it's kind of coming together throughout the week. It's things that I'm observing. It's oftentimes right now what it ends up being is two or three sections of updates, whether that's, you know, we're looking for a new building, or, you know, we're going through bank refinancing or things like that, maybe big picture. Maybe it's a check-in against our goals or our plan. Oftentimes it's celebrating. For us, it's been a lot of, hey, here's this new person who just joined the team, and explaining who they are and why they're joining the team.
Here's a picture.
Yeah, exactly, and why it's important. But then I have a last portion that's kind of in closing, and that's a section where I try to take a step back and frame what we're doing in a larger perspective, either the purpose of growing a company very quickly, which is to give us all more opportunities, and sure, we're going to stub our toe on a lot of things, and that's going to be painful, but work is generally painful, so let's make sure that we're celebrating the fun parts of it, which is we're getting new opportunities, we're getting new challenges, we're getting opportunities to do things that you wouldn't necessarily get to do otherwise if you're at a company that's doing well, but not asking you to take on some completely new hat every, you know, 4 weeks. So putting that in perspective, and then often, I had kind of said, Amazon is basically becoming much more of a mall. It turns out we built a retail company, and I think we've built a smart retail company. So as we scale that, we also want to be stewards and thoughtful of the history of retail and what that looks like. And so I want to put what we're building in context of what I think is going on in the larger retail space, both now and in the past, the 60s, the 50s, what that looked like and what that development looked like. So at a minimum, what it also gives me is an opportunity to think through the business and talk publicly to all of our team members. And hopefully, I think the way that they interpret that is that I trust them with that, that I value their feedback, that I want them thinking about that as well. They are part of our growth. And they are the ones executing what we're trying to achieve. And so I want them to understand why we're trying to achieve that.
Yeah, I love the idea of why.
Yeah.
Like, what is it that I did today that contributed to the ultimate goal?
Yeah, those are the best notes. The worst notes are the ones where it's just a bunch of updates. Yeah. That's when I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, it sounds like you also do some research.
Yeah, no, I try to. I don't know. I've joked that, I mean, you know, all of this kind of started because Scott Dorsey was writing these notes at Exact Target. I've joked. I've never actually seen one of those.
Did you work at Exact Target?
I didn't know. I've just heard nothing but great things about it, and I think that they built a really great culture, and I know they had great communication. So I've never seen one of those notes, actually, so I probably should see it sometime because I just took the idea and kind of ran with my own version of it. So
I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
Yeah. Is there something that you're worried about on a daily basis?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A multitude of
things.
One
through five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's all types of, I mean, there's kind of micro and macro things. You know, micro, when you're building a business this fast, I'll tell you what, cash flow becomes just incredibly important. You know, that's something that I don't lose sleep over, but it sure, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about and managing around. You know, we've been in the process this year of refinancing and extending our debt. We've been growing quickly, so naturally we need a larger line of credit as we continue growing. We've got inventory piece, so that's an important piece of what we do. One of the downsides of growing so quickly is we kind of grew out of all the local companies and banks pretty quickly. And so now all of a sudden I'm sitting there, you know, this year having to have tens of conversations with some banks that we've been kindly introduced to, but have to start to build a relationship there and understand what that looks like.
Is the tendency with cash flow is to overspend when you think you're growing super fast?
It's easy to overspend when you're growing super fast. Yeah, especially when you're a business like ours, which is self-funded. So, you know, from our perspective, we effectively are taking profitability of our business and investing it in future growth on technology, people, marketing, advertising, that kind of stuff.
When you say it's self-funded, is it just the two of you or do you have some investors?
Yeah, so no investors. We've used debt financing for kind of our inventory management and working capital on that side, but we haven't taken any equity so far. That's something that we'll be open to. I think we're kind of naturally growing into a place where we're making longer term investments. And by definition, that's longer term capital.
But the two of you are funding its growth through the profit of the company and credit.
Yep.
And no other investors.
Yeah, no other investors.
Well, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, it's and that's not to say that that's better or worse than any other form of growing a business. It's very, it's definitely a specific form of growing a business, and it is more complicated in some ways than going and taking a large check and being able to spend that over a defined period of time. You know, I think one of the things as I look at, and I've been lucky, I've been at Angie's List, As it was scaling nationally and kind of saw what that venture-backed type of company can look like, I was at OneClick Ventures, which is a local company based out of Greenwood, Indiana. It was a husband and wife team, Ranji and Angie Stockland, that created that. That was self-funded. So I've been lucky to work at growing companies that have done both models.
So your intention really is to continue to grow at as comfortable a pace as possible,
yeah,
but as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we've got some bold plans. I think that we're in a big opportunity right now. We want to be as aggressive as possible in this opportunity.
I have to ask you about HQ2. What do you know about HQ2? Is it coming here?
Yeah, no, I don't know anything about it. I guess that would be nice.
Have you talked to them about it? Have they asked you about it?
I was calling up Jeff. I'm not privy to any additional information. The question that I get often is, would it change or be beneficial to SupplyKick if Amazon was here?
Sure.
We've been pretty successful with Amazon being, 3,000 miles away, so I don't think it would matter all that much if they were here or not. My second follow-up to that is often, and while it would be great for Amazon to move here and for us to have 50,000, new jobs that are part of Amazon, I also think we should make sure that we're thoughtful about if it's not Amazon, where are we going to get those next 50,000 jobs from?
Mm-hmm.
And let's go after them no matter what. I can tell you, I can't tell you that SupplyKick is going to be able to provide all of those, but maybe we can provide some meaningful chunk. Maybe if we keep growing like we're growing, we could get into a couple hundred to 1,000 people. I think that's going to be hard and it's going to take a lot of effort, but we certainly could be that. There's all types of companies here locally that are, I think, well-funded, have really great strategies, are in a space that makes a lot of sense and has scalability. That's super exciting. And so while I'm excited to see all this conversation around recruiting Amazon and having that here, and don't get me wrong, that would be huge and life-changing for the city, I just want to make sure that we continue to put the right effort behind all the businesses that are growing right now in Indianapolis and around Indianapolis, because I think if we put that same effort, that same focus on these businesses, I think we might be surprised by the number of jobs, the number of personal development, the amount of change that we could create here from those businesses.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Josh. I appreciate it.
Of course. No, thanks for having me in. It was great to talk.
My thanks again to Josh Owens. I will now break the suspense. I know you've waited 20-some minutes for this. On IBJ's Fast 25 list of the fastest-growing companies in central Indiana, SupplyKick ranked third. If you can believe it, the top honoree, Greenwood-based apartment developer, the Garrett Companies, rocked revenue growth of 1,284%. The number two company, Fishers-based Administrative Strategies, logged growth of 729%. Now, you can see the whole list and read profiles of each company in this week's print edition of IBJ, or find a link to that content on the homepage at ibj.com. I also want to draw your attention to the latest story in Haley Colombo's series on poverty and the growing gulf between Indianapolis's affluent and poor residents. The Central Indiana Community Foundation, which directs charitable contributions from wealthy donors and is responsible for big quality of life projects like the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, is actually shifting its mission to, in part, dismantling institutional racism. It also is focusing on helping people from all walks of life get a fair shot at success. Now, inside these big ideas are issues like public transportation, mass incarceration, offender reentry, and workforce development. If you're like me, you're thinking, hey, that's great, but what exactly is that going to look like? Well, check out Haley's story this week in IBJ and at IBJ.com. In the meantime, this is Mason King and the IBJ Podcast. We'll be back next week.